time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy on Residence 104. This is a brand new season here in Residence 104. Lots of exciting shows coming back. Lots of new shows starting here in London. The you know, we're on the front doors of the apocalypse, of course. Check it. How you doing, Stacy?
Oh my God, I missed the Residence 104.4 FM audience so much. You would not believe it.
Oh, they are truly a fantastic audience out there, and we cover all of the shenanigans going on in the city, like George Osborne's Ponzi scheme, which I see Mitch Rubenstein, who's a frequent guest on
Mitch Feierstein.
Oh, yeah. Mitch Feierstein, who is a frequent guest on our show on RT, Kaiser Report, wrote a story in the Independent, Stacy, talking about George Osborne's Ponzi scheme. And people understand that what they're trying to do there in the city of London is pump up another housing bubble, and at the same time that they're pumping up that housing bubble by printing up lots of free money to give away to their constituents there in the city, they're also causing the bond market to collapse, as I've been talking about on this show for a year. The yield on the 10-year bond is now over 3% in the UK. When we started talking about this, is at 140, 145. So people are now suffering as a result of the bonds that are down sharply in value. Inflation is on the rise. That's what happens when the bond market collapses and interest rates start to go up. You have inflation. And house prices, you know, are in a bubble. So there will be a few people that will be winners as a result of Osborne's new Ponzi scheme in the housing bubble, but most will be losers.
Yeah, actually, we are in New York City, and you may hear fire trucks behind us occasionally because fire trucks seem to rage down the streets every few hours. But, you know, speaking of housing bubbles, you know, we were looking at some apartments here just to see, compare it to London. And say for £800,000 in London gets you an ordinary two-bedroom in central London, you know, so it's central. But you could also get central here for the same amount, $1.3 million, way more spectacular. So I was just trying to compare the cities because the average price is not too dissimilar. But I think if you, you know, I think because there's a lot more really, really expensive places around Central Park and, you know, certain areas of Manhattan that skews the average. But, you know, for an ordinary person, you could get certainly a lot more bang for your buck here. So the property in London that is in this bubble is kind of substandard to what you could buy in other major cities where you can actually earn more money.
Well, it's a bubble in both places. And for the same reason, you got the Federal Reserve Bank in the U.S. plus the Bank of England in the U.K. and ECB and Bank of Japan. They're engaged in attempting to extricate the world's debt overhang by creating more debt, and they open themselves up to a catastrophe or a black swan event. And a few of them that have reared their ugly head, I would say the top two contenders would be the Fukushima atomic energy spill is getting more and more important as the level of radiation entering the Pacific Ocean starts to become quite alarming, and the situation in Syria. So here you have two hotspots, both of which would require state intervention in the terms of a bailout, but the state is now never have been more indebted. The UK and the US have never been more indebted. That includes the debts that they took on to fight World War II. So here you have, I guess you could call it, they're not really in a world war. They've been involved in these conflicts around the world. But going back to World War II, where it was genuinely an existential crisis for Britain and America, they allowed their debt-to-GDP ratios to go to 150 to 200%, 220% of GDP. And now, in a relative peacetime, they've allowed those debt-to-GDP ratios to get to similar levels. And now the war begins. So does that mean they're going to go to 400, 500% debt-to-GDP ratio? Which, of course, at some point, the whole fiat currency system collapses. And you have to go back to re-architecting the entire global economy. And, of course, there will be at that point very, very few winners. And an overwhelming majority of folks will find themselves living in a world where gas or petrol, as you say, is quadruple the price where it is today. Food is quadruple the price where it is today. And the people who are in abject poverty go from, in the U.S. and the U.K., those populations become the biggest populations.
Well, speaking of Syria, we had in this this break that we had from the audience here on Resonance 104.4 FM, the parliament voted down a war on Syria, which was quite amazing. And now the vote in the U.S. is coming up in the Congress, and that looks like it actually might not happen, because particularly in the Congress, because there's midterm elections coming up next year, and there's overwhelming, it's just a huge percentage of the population here is strongly against yet another invasion, especially as even the media that really wants the war, they're part of the war machine, remember, they're finding it very difficult to present any rebels that are sympathetic. They all are carrying Al-Qaeda flags. They're Chechen or Afghani. They're not even Syrian. So it's hard for them to paint a picture that people want to, get behind, providing air support for Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, well, the wars of the past 10 years, or you could go back to the wars of the 21st, 20th, and 19th century, many times you find behind the instigating these wars false flag attacks. And what's happened in this particular Syria situation is that the false flag cookbook has been laid bare. So the chemical weapons attack very quickly was shot down, not only by alternative media, but by alternative by politicians on both sides of the Atlantic. So in the U.S., it was shot down by Ron Paul and Rand Paul, who went on mainstream media and said, this looks like a false flag. In the U.K., of course, Nigel Farage has been picking away at the monstrosity that is the establishment political class just signing off on these false flag attacks. And so in the U.K., as you point out, they voted against the Syria. And I think that was directly impacted by alternative media and by the campaigns of Nigel Farage, who has really been made an internationally well-known politician thanks to alternative media. His appearances on RT, his appearances on King World News, his appearances on InfoWars. This has all led up to now alternative media I was thinking about this last night, Stacey. The lead up to the Iraq war was 2 million Brits in the street were protesting against Blair in the Iraq war. He went ahead and did it anyway. And a lot of people were discouraged and saying, wow, people power means nothing. But I think the legacy of that is the Syria war, in that politicians finally got it through their nut, as the artist taxi driver would say, that they are answerable to the people at the end of the day. And I think they finally realized that the jig is up with these wars of convenience, this blood for oil. So I would say that the people power eventually kicked in. It took a few years, but I think we've seen the result of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned false flag, and I want to actually bring up a piece from Tim Shorrock tweeted, and he's with The Nation, and I think he used to be Washington Post or some other newspaper, but he tweeted this statement on Syria from the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS. Ray McGovern is part of that, but other former CIA and NSA and other defense intelligence agents, they all belong to this, and they sent out a press release. They didn't call it a false flag, but they said that it was a lie, that it was dodgy information, dodgier, just as dodgy as the dodgy dossier and the talcum powder threats before the UN Security Council by Colin Powell before Iraq. So they're saying that this alleged sarin attack by the Assad regime doesn't look, more and more intelligence behind the scenes a lot of intelligence officers don't believe it's actually really from Assad, that it's probably from some rebel group or a small contingent of rebel groups or whoever it was, but it wasn't Assad, and that the U.S. and U.K. and people claiming it is know that it wasn't him, and they're just perpetuating a lie.
This was all foretold in a movie 10 years ago or so, Wag the Dog, if you remember that film with Dustin Hoffman. And they needed to stage a false flag to get America into a war for the oil companies. And it was a farce. And it was a very funny, well-written movie. And complete with Willie Nelson singing a song about a guy who lost his shoes, or I forget the details now. But the farcical aspect of that film seemed to have been lost on the American public. America famously doesn't do irony. But I think finally the jig is up. Finally, the American public, I think, finally has seen through the farce. And it's because, again, the hammering away of alternative media. This show, our other show, on RT, the shows we've made for years now, which people say, why do you seem to take such a lighthearted approach, if you will, to these stories? It's because we don't really respect the bankers or the politicians, because we want to communicate the idea that they are disrespecting you. So why should we disrespect? Why should we respect them? Type of thing. And certainly the sledgehammer at the tip of the spear is Alex Jones. I have to give him credit, even though he's been in the UK and he was on BBC, and everyone, turned on him and said he was behaving like a mad gorilla unleashed. The fact is, he provides cover for people to come in behind him saying pretty much the exact same thing, but in more docile tones, and it all adds up. So, he's the grenade that explodes, the first guy on the beach, if you will, that gets shot at. But you need those guys to win wars.
Well, the other thing about Wag the Dog that is relevant is, remember the scene they staged? I think it was like in a Bosnia-like setup. It was a woman and a child, a baby, killed or attacked. And this is the thing you see over and over that is used. And remember, Hollywood and the CIA and the Defense Department are very close. They inform each other. They work together. So that they got that information, that they have close connections to the Defense Department and conjured up this story about a baby, and you have to support a war. Look, this dead baby. The same thing we see over and over. It's always dead babies. We saw that with the first Gulf War. Remember, it was the Saddam Hussein was eating babies in Kuwait. And the same thing here. It's always about babies. We have to protect the babies or the women in Afghanistan. And you see that it does tap into an emotional thing, because I see it on Twitter, like hysterical tweets to me that don't you care about those 400 babies that only Obama and Cameron say there were 400 children killed. Medecins Sans Frontières said in total 300 were and 50 were killed. But adults and children. We don't know the source of the attack. But that's what I'm saying is, like, these people are very emotional and hysterical, like out of control emotion on their tweets, saying like these we have to spend billions of dollars to go save those babies. When, by the way, in their own backyard, there's extreme poverty here. How many American babies are dying every year because of poverty? Lack of health care, lack of dental care, lack of proper nutrition. Well, because nobody's wagging the dog for them about those children, they don't do anything.
Yeah, that's right. If you really cared about the dead babies in Syria, then why you should go after the killers of those dead babies, and that would be the people who put together that attack to instigate the war. So that includes the people who benefit from this war. Oh, who's that? The U.S., Britain, Israel. Oh, those are the people. It's interesting that in this war, it's a proxy war, basically. And it pits Saudi Arabia versus Russia, because Russia has a near monopoly on a gas pipeline into Europe. Saudi Arabia wants that business. They want a piece of that business, and they can't
And
build
Qatar.
and Qatar, and they can't build a pipeline without getting, knocking off Syria. So that's what this is all about. And if they have to kill, if Saudi Arabia has to kill a few babies to get the pipeline, well, they were the Most of the hijackers for 9/11 were Saudi Arabia. Prince Bandar threatened Tony Blair with a 7/7 bus bombing atrocity in London unless he called off the slush fund investigation. Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia threatened to a terrorist act in the Sochi Olympics up and coming. So there's your baby killer. Are you going to do anything about it now that you know the truth? Now that you know the facts? Oh, I guess not.
Well, we'll see what happens because this could be another, the red line being crossed could be from the Obama administration when if Congress votes down the war, because remember, everybody is thinks the media is being tough because they challenged Obama about why he even went to Congress. Doesn't he look weak doing that? Well, it's in the freaking US Constitution that only the Congress can declare war. The executive does not declare war. And yet the media here is part of this propagandizing the population is they're acting like jackals and hyenas, like pretending like, hoo-hoo, why are you asking Congress? Aren't you weak to do that? Well, the authority rests only with Congress. So if they say, no, we cannot go to war, we will not go to war against Syria, and yet Obama decides to release, missiles against them, what happens then? Does anybody actually start impeachment? Because that would be breaking the law.
Yeah, well, a couple of things there. Impeachment ring, first of all, I want to say that the Republicans find themselves in a position that they didn't think they would be in 6 months ago, and that is that they are now angling for a takeover in the midterm elections and the presidential elections in 2016, because they're the ones taking the moral high ground here by not invading Syria. And which is very unusual because the Republicans typically are the war party, the ones who are always, going to war. But shrewd politicians like Rand Paul and his dad, Ron Paul, figure out quite quickly that they can use this to unseat Obama and the whole Democratic Party and getting back into power by taking, by following the Constitution. Usually they're the ones who don't, but this time they did an about face and they're the ones who are. Meanwhile, I'm curious to see how the folks that support Obama are going to play this. Certainly people in the media that we follow, that we've mentioned, like Bill Maher, who does that show on HBO, really curious to see how this, how he's going to kind of spin this so he doesn't look like he's already been outed by a racist. Remember Glenn Greenwald on his show, Real Time with Bill Maher, outed Bill Maher as a despicable racist. But nevertheless, we'll see how that plays out. Now, going forward, your question, what if they say no and he goes ahead anyway? Well, I think then we have a Richard Nixon situation, which I think Obama could realistically be impeached. We haven't had an impeachment where presidents had to step down since Nixon. If he bombs Syria anyway, it's an impeachable offense. There's already people that, or don't like Obama. And if you give him an opening toward impeach, that's legitimate, and this would be a legitimate impeachment moment, then they're going to relish the opportunity to get rid of this guy because nobody, many, many people don't like Barack Obama.
Well, I think also another option that might happen is France, because of course the French population is the only Western population in support of the war. And, having lived there for 6 or 7 years, we could say with great certainty that the population itself is very anti-Arab, extremely so, and extremely North, anti-North Africans. So they will support the war. Any bombing of any Arabs, they support. But also, François Hollande has to live down that photo that has emerged of him looking really goofy that went viral. So, this is a way for him to become a man again and kill some people.
Well, yeah, you've lived in France for 6 years, 7 years. I've lived in France for 14 years, and I can tell you without a shadow of doubt that the French people hate Arabs with a passion for goes back to the struggle with Algeria, obviously, all of the Arab colonies, the coming onto French soil, living in France, is tremendous hatred. People who visit France, and especially Americans during the expat movement, black Americans, black jazz musicians, black poets, moved to Paris and they had a groovy swinging time, and they spoke about how tolerant the French people are of black Americans. And that's true, but all of the incredibly hatred you have in America toward blacks, you have that in France toward Arabs. So yeah, French people, they don't mind American blacks coming to France and adding to their cultural mix. But there's no Arab in political power in France. There's no Arabs on in any media outlet in France. Same too with black representations as well. Very almost none, and it's an extremely homogenous society of white upper class technocrats that come from five or six universities, and it's an extremely tight group. So people don't understand that element of French life. And when you mention that on Twitter or something, you say, French people are incredibly have an incredible hatred toward Arabs. You immediately hear back like, but the cheese is so great, and the wine is beautiful, and the French people are lovely, and I don't think anyone understands it.
Well, of course, there's also the history between France and Syria. France, it was the French mandate of Syria from 1920. Remember, they invaded Syria, the Arab Kingdom of Syria, as it was known then, in 1920. It was 70,000 French troops invaded, and the Hashemite kingdom had to flee to Iraq. So they imposed the French mandate on Syria and Lebanon. So the fact that they're even allegedly supposed to be the saviors of these people is ridiculous, that we even keep on going back to, there are a lot of people on Twitter. You see, like, I think you mentioned that social media and alternative media are invading the mind space of people around the world. So you do see people, openly reminding people. So when Obama says this chemical weapons cannot be used, this is a red line, this has gone too far. Well, just look at Fallujah. It has one of the highest rates of deformed babies in the world because of all the nuclear weapons and depleted uranium and chemicals we dumped on that city in, what was it, like 2004, 2005? There's a lot of hypocrisy going on in this our whole space in the last few years.
Yeah, what was Agent Orange in the Vietnam War? That was a chemical weapons attack that was maimed millions of Vietnamese and also destroyed thousands and thousands of American soldiers. What are cluster bombs that America won't sign on to the treaty or preventing cluster bombs? What about white phosphorus that burns through the skin? It just burns through your skin and through your bones that America condones white phosphorus. They don't seem to have any problem with these weapons. So the duplicity, the hypocrisy is stunning as always, and that's one of the hallmarks of the American culture is the outrageous duplicity that you can have the same people. Saying in one same breath that they condone chemical weapons while basically scorching people to death with white phosphorus on the very same day. And but that's what makes America America.
Well, again, but we go back also to if you really, really, if you're listening out there and you feel real passion that we must go save these babies that you see in, if it's propaganda or real, we don't know. But if you see these babies and you feel the urgent need to go bomb this Syrian regime and go over there and fight, look at yourself and see if you feel that at all about the children in your own home country, where you have a voice, allegedly, where you vote for your elected leaders, where you can determine outcomes in policy, where you pay taxes and contribute to the regime here. Do you feel any concern for the children suffering in your own country because of austerity, because of banker-imposed austerity, the cutbacks on disability and housing, all these things that children right now in your own country are suffering? Do you feel any passion for them? Would you care if Syrians did and started bombing your regime in order to save your children? You have to look at your own self. And one thing about spending so much energy trying to save other people that you have no political contribution to or taxes to is that it absolves you of any need to solve your own situation, your own family situation, your own societal situation, your own communal situation.
Yeah, and in Britain here, you'll have because of this bedroom tax, which is part of the austerity measures, which are needed to bail out banksters who stole billions of dollars, billions of pounds. You know, you'll see an image of a crippled kid, legless, in a wheelchair, being pushed to the curb and then dying. And they'll flash that on TV, and British people will say, well, that's necessary so that bankers can continue to steal from us, and I support that. But in the meantime, there's the chemical attack staged by Saudi Arabia in Syria, where some children were murdered by our allies in Saudi Arabia, so I need to spend my money and my resources there. So once again, the duplicity is stunning. Propaganda and propagandizing by the establishment media outlet here in the UK is effective, and alternative media has, in my opinion, contributed mightily to Parliament voting no to Syrian involvement. So we are having an impact. The anti-war movement's having an impact. People like Owen Jones, who are fighting in the good fight, are having an impact. The artist taxi driver is having an impact. And so this is now, I think, the screw is turning.
Well, you mentioned Richard Nixon. And, of course, he committed the crime of sending operatives in to steal some stuff from the Democratic National Committee. Now, this sort of, it wasn't that, though, that he was impeached for. It was the cover-up, right, the lie. Now it looks like J.P. Morgan may be caught in the same snare because, yeah, you should see Max's face. His eyes go bug. So apparently they're under criminal investigation by the FBI, three Houston traders, and they don't mention it, but it could be Blythe Masters, the British woman who heads their commodities desk, or did head their commodities desk at the time. And they were being investigated for rigging, electricity and power markets in the Midwest and California. Basically, the same exact markets that Enron, they had Enron's old markets. And they used the same loopholes and opportunities that Enron did to rig the energy markets there. So they were being investigated by FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And FERC fined them $410 million. I don't think they had to admit guilt or anything. But in the filings, FERC did mention somewhere in the papers that the executives were not forthcoming and, in fact, may have lied to them. So Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, saw that. She read that. She noticed that. And then questioned in Congress, questioned FERC, why didn't they investigate? Why didn't they press criminal charges? Because that's a felony, to lie to federal officials. Remember, we've covered this before. I think it's called 1001, 1001, something like that. That there, you can't lie to any federal officials without facing like a decade in prison. So they didn't have a response. But the FBI and U.S. attorneys here in Manhattan, they have apparently opened an investigation about why these guys lied. So they could be facing criminal prosecution in the future for lying. This is different from having to prove any energy market manipulation, any insider trading, anything like that. These aren't those sort of crimes which juries never really support. They're all for that because they want to do it themselves one day, steal money. But simple lying to an official, you can prove.
Right. Well, that looks encouraging. And Elizabeth Warren, you know, she's a bulldog and she's a senator now. And she's going after this banking establishment. She's kind of like the Rudy Giuliani of this decade. You know, she's going after the bankers. And so hopefully she will finally break through this iron wall of non-culpability that's set up with the unholy alliance of banksters, politicians, regulators, fund managers, rating agencies, and the lot.
Well, that's the big news out this week. We don't know. You know, a lot of things get brushed under the carpet, but the fact that it's not a financial crime that they're particularly investigating, and there can be no precedence there, remember, because we must be allowed to commit all financial crimes. So the fact that this is outside of financial crimes, this is just obstruction of justice, which is a different thing that maybe the banking establishment will be okay with, and they won't murder any politicians as a result of them going after this. Maybe that might actually happen. But so we've been in New York for a few weeks now, and it's been perfect weather the whole time. Not a single day has been bad. And now, what else do you want to talk about? You want to talk about the latest stuff coming out of the NSA? Because it's getting from the NSA documents released by Edward Snowden.
Well, encryption is in the news because remember Edward Snowden, when he was in the spotlight, was asked about what's really important going on here, and he said encryption works because he was able to communicate with Glenn Greenwald and others using encryption. Since then, a lot of these encrypted email services have been shut down or voluntarily shut down because they didn't want to comply with authorities who wanted to decrypt their encrypted documents. Now, according to the NSA reveal by Snowden and his group, you've got the NSA involved in backdooring their way into technology, providing services and companies to bypass the encryption that goes into things like credit card transaction, banking details, and some of the encryption that we've now taken for granted here in this country. So this is setting up two things. Number one, foreign companies are now actively seeking to get out of U.S. Services. So U.S. cloud services like Google or Amazon, foreigners are deciding that they need to set up their own services because the U.S. services cannot be trusted. So that means that the U.S. economy would take a meaningful hit. And I mean by a meaningful hit, I mean more meaningful than what the Labor Department of Statistics just reported, that the U.S. economy was down last quarter because of loss in the porno industry. 20,000 people dropped out of the porno industry last quarter because of an AIDS scare, and for this reason, the U.S. economy, a $16 trillion economy, suffered another setback, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics in America. Well, that seems trivial compared to having trillions of dollars worth of techno contracts being rerouted away from the U.S. because the NSA refuses to want any kind of free market competition. They want to just control everything and take a percentage of every single transaction in their rent-seeking exploits. So that's the first thing. Number two, of course, you have to think about Bitcoin because Bitcoin is something we've talked about for years, and Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency or encrypted currency. And people have said, well, you know, the NSA could just decrypt the encrypted part of Bitcoin, and is it under threat for this? So far, my thoughts are that Bitcoin is still cryptologically sound. Clearly, it's being nipped at the heels by those who want to crack all encrypted technologies. Now we have a bit of an arms race going. So you've got 40,000 nodes on the distribution of the Bitcoin protocol that are cracking these precious numbers that contribute to the creation of Bitcoin versus NSA and other government agencies that are looking to decrypt all the encrypted material in the world as the Stasi-like takeover of world affairs continues. I think that Bitcoin, like alternative media, is going to put up a good fight against these guys. And in the end, you know, if you look at history, monolithic centralized powers that are run on hubris and guile don't last.
Well, there's a few things. So these new revelations came from the New York Times regarding the NSA and these encryption services. So they're basically saying that encryption is not safe. But the fact is that encryption is safe. It's the services you're using to provide the encryption that are not necessarily safe, because the NSA is getting back doors. Many of the companies are American, so these guys I would guess that the companies are being presented with NSA security letters, as national security letters, where they're not allowed to ever talk about it. They can't say anything to anyone, not even their wives, their children, nobody, the CEO. So they have to provide a back door once presented with this letter. This is why I think those two companies shut down before they could even be presented with this letter, because once they were presented with the letter, they couldn't shut down. They wouldn't be allowed to. So that's what I think is happening, is they have back doors. Remember, they have hedge funds, investment funds, startup funds. The CIA does, various intelligence agencies in the U.S., including, I assume, the NSA. They are become investors in the company. And they, so a lot of these, this is where the back door is coming before you can even, you know, they're in the back door before you can even encrypt the data. So I don't know, however, what the situation will be with any of the European companies. I know there are new encryption services. For example, the guys behind Pirate Bay, they've raised like £100,000 on a crowdsourced crowdfunding site to do a new encryption service. I think like instant messaging, encrypted instant messaging. And presumably they're not going to be able to be presented with a national security letter, which forces them to comply with the NSA. So this is the new frontier. Yeah, what's going to happen from here? I think the media likes to present this idea, as they have in the past week, that no encryption is safe. So all encryption around the world is not safe from us. We can crack it all. I don't think that's the case.
Mm. Right. I think that's an important distinction. So the encryption itself is not being cracked so much as the companies that provide encryption are being compromised, so that the NSA is basically there in viewing things, you know, before it's encrypted, or as corrupting the encryption itself. So the encryption technology is not questioned here. So in the case of Bitcoin, I think that it's still ahead of the game by leaps and bounds, and I don't see that there's any compromise there. But clearly, it's something that everyone should be aware of. But it's part and parcel of this overall takeover, a coup d'etat of the public space by the private interest. You know, going back hundreds of years, thousands of years, there's always been a tension between the public good and the private good. And there's room for both. There should be the private interest and there should be the public interest. There is room for both. And one of the great things about having an expanded public interest or public domain is that it forces private interest to be more competitive. So, for example, if in fact the public interest suggests that we can't really afford in the public interest to have carbon emitting cars anymore, the private interest must respond by inventing new business models that reduce the carbon footprint. That's what they're good at. That's what you want them to do. You don't want them to say, well, we need to reduce the public interest in the public domain to zero and have only the private interest, which is completely compromised and there's not really any competition left over anymore, and you end up living in basically Fukushima land. No, that's bad. So, you know, these two things coexist. They always have coexisted both in nature and in business and in politics, and the public interest is something that Bitcoin expands because it competes with private currencies like the U.S. dollar and the pound. These are currencies that are created by and for private banks for the use of private banks to expand the private domain. Bitcoin is a public currency created by and for the public interest to expand the public domain. That's the big difference. I just thought of that, and I'll probably say that again somewhere else somewhere soon.
Well, you know, here's another story that's in the headlines right now. So this is quite interesting, because on Tuesday, Apple is expected to introduce a new iPhone, a new cheaper iPhone, less expensive. And, well, as you talked about, the media getting out there, getting these tough stories out, Guardian today, the headline reads, "Workers' Rights Flouted at Apple iPhone Factory in China. The new cheaper iPhone that Apple will unveil to a global audience on Tuesday is being produced under illegal and abusive conditions in Chinese factories owned by one of America's largest manufacturing businesses, investigators have claimed. Workers are asked to stand for 12-hour shifts with just two 30-minute breaks 6 days a week, the nonprofit organization China Labor Watch has claimed. Staff are allegedly working without adequate protective equipment, at risk from chemicals, noise, and lasers for an average of 69 hours a week. Apple has a self-imposed limit of 60 hours a week. The problems were uncovered at a plant in Wuxi near Shanghai, where the iPhone 5C is being produced. So, you know, the other story that goes along with this is that Google has announced in the past week that they're producing the Moto X Google phone in America, and it's costing $4 more than per unit than it costs iPhone to produce in China or Samsung to produce in China. So the question was raised, like, why can't you just, you know, consumers don't really notice $4. They spend that much. This pack of cigarettes costs more than that. A can of Coke costs that at the beach. You know, so why not bring manufacturing back here? That's one of the questions. But here we see what that $4 difference means, the difference in conditions.
Yeah, and plus to throw into the mix that Amazon is going to, rumored to be introducing a smartphone that they're going to give away for free. You know, their big model is give away the hardware and sell you the software. It's the old razor blade model that Gillette invented 100 years ago. Give away the razors and have people come back and buy the actual razor blades. So, but on this subject of manufacturing, bringing it home. Not only don't they bring home the manufacturing and the jobs that go with it, but they don't even bring home the money they make overseas. They keep it offshore where it's untaxed. So that's acting as a bad agent. You're acting as a bad corporate citizen. There should be a penalty for that. You know, the American government should immediately, you know, you want the government. It's not that the government solves all problems, but you do need a referee in all competitive instances, and the referee needs to step in and call a penalty. The penalty should be something that restores balance to the competitive landscape. So, I mean, that's the thing you always hear about whenever you have a discussion. Remember, we were in out on Fisher's Island a couple of weeks ago, and anytime, you know, you talk to a certain group of people about the fact that the government has a role in regulating markets, you know, they start having irritable bowel syndrome and getting all hyperventilating, because they've been trained like Pavlov's dog to bark, bark, bark whenever you hear the word government regulation. But the same people are wealthy because of government regulation. It was government regulation that created the competition in real estate development or whatever other industry they might be in that allowed them to win at that game. It wasn't that, you know, the god of commerce touched them on the shoulder and handed them $1 billion. They competed in something called capitalism, the board game of life, and they won. You know, they've been winning. That's due to competition and regulation. But yeah. Then when you say, well, you know what, why not apply the same standards across the board so that you have the genius of free market competition touch all lives, not just your life? Then it becomes like, oh, no, my diapers are filling. I need my and I get to be disgusting.
Well, if it weren't for Teddy Roosevelt busting all the trusts, the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, we would have an economy in the U.S. that looked a lot more like the U.K., where 70% of all the freeholds, all the land, is owned by just a small handful of people. Here in the U.S., you could have had that same thing, but he busted up all of those huge monopolies and trusts. So there was a point back in the early 1900s where we were on the path towards that sort of consolidation of all the land being owned by just a handful of families.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the Teddy Roosevelt thing comes up often. You know, we think that there needs to be some trust busting. And trust ultimately can't even survive. I mean, look at Microsoft. There's a Microsoft, twice convicted predatory monopolist, owned 80% of the desktop market, spawned Bill Gates, who then took his billions to spread genetically engineered seeds from Monsanto around the world to become a menace of a global menace. But the company, the legacy, is that it's dying a horrible death because it hasn't had to compete in 25 years. It's just been doing the same trick of coercing people to buy their products bundled in with hardware. But, you know, the whole architecture of what they used to call the Wintel architecture of Windows and Intel's chips bundled together and then get corporations to buy into this amalgamated nonsense is died because along came the tablet computer, which suddenly there were millions and millions of applications for a tablet computer at the airport. You know, who they all have the tablets. Everyone's got a tablet computer. So they couldn't, monopolies are not good, really, in any case. It's stupid. That's my point. It's stupid.
Well, you mentioned Microsoft, and that goes back to the NSA story because, of course, Skype, which they bought in a few years ago, was safe until Microsoft bought it and offered the back door.
You mentioned Microsoft buying Skype, and that gave the government a back door into Skype because Microsoft, to keep their predatory monopoly going, they had to give politicians millions of dollars. In America, unfortunately, you can buy a politician for $1 million. It's kind of embarrassing in that way. So then, of course, you know, who is the biggest investor in Facebook? It is Microsoft, Bill Gates of Microsoft. Of course, now Facebook has now been shown to be cooperating with the Stasi as well as Google. So, you know, Bill Gates and Microsoft are really one of the worst influences on politics and business in America, really, for 50 years.
I think also, you know, we use a service called You Send It, and it was famous. I remember when I first started using it, like back in 2004 or so, 2005, everybody said it was Osama bin Laden used that to send data. This was one of the fake stories, I guess. But yeah, there were concerns about people sending stuff on You Send It. But, you know, we always use it because we have to send files to our director or editor and things like that. So it's pretty big files, and they would allow up to 2 gigabytes. But they just sold to some bizarre company called Hightail. And I'm sure it's part of this whole scam that everything goes through these now NSA servers. Because it's just like Skype went immediately downhill once they sold to the NSA. This is the same thing. It's like become really trashy product that is difficult to use, not very consistent, and I'm pretty sure something dodgy has happened to it.
Yeah, it looks that way. By the way, I didn't when I mentioned Microsoft for 50 years, I meant 25 years. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm curious. I mean, Kim.com in New Zealand with his storage locker for digital content is now, he calls himself the privacy company. He's a crusader.
He stepped down last Friday. He stepped down on Friday.
From
heading Mega. He no longer runs the company. He's handed it to somebody else because he's going to run for parliament in New Zealand.
That's great news. Because he had Julian Assange, you know, there's an Australian election.
Yeah.
He's standing for, I don't know what they call it over there, senator or something.
Member of parliament.
Okay. And now Kim.com is going into to politics. And this is what's needed. This is what's happening. I think maybe I should get into politics now. I could be a senator from my state of Pennsylvania, where my family's been in Pennsylvania in America going back 300 years. You know, we came over with William Penn, who created Pennsylvania. My family, the Kaisers, were there's a lot of Kaisers buried in graveyards in Pennsylvania, K-E-I-S-E-R, because that Schmada, William Penn, convinced us to leave the Bavaria in Germany, which was a beautiful place, lots of going on, you know, it's fantastic. But no, we sold this story of riches in some swamp called Pennsylvania, and we left. Now, then we got stuck in that unholy nightmare, and then we ended up, you know, contributing to the Declaration of Independence and things like that. But nevertheless, it's time to go back and reclaim my rightful position as a senator from Pennsylvania.
Yes, it was the Palatinate area, and it was you could look it up. It's really interesting. There was King George had a propaganda campaign. There were like posters of the time back in the 1600s where they would convince the Protestants of Germany, of the Palatinate region, to go to the Shangri-La. They had posters saying it was like Shangri-La paradise, like paradise on earth. and you have to go here because we'll give you free land. So they were promising huge amounts of land, which they did receive. But it took many long weeks to sail, you know, many months to get there, because they had to sail up to Amsterdam, then over to the UK, and they were trapped in London for a while. Riots were caused by all these Germans being there and taking their jobs or whatever, I don't know. But there were riots against the Germans. They wanted them out. They finally shipped off to Pennsylvania. They arrived, and it was a swamp. A lot of them died because of the various malaria-type diseases from the swamplands. But lo and behold, the Kaisers survived.
Yeah, that freaking William Penn is a shyster. So now we have to right some wrongs. I'm going to run for senator in Pennsylvania, and the people there should vote for me. Philly, you know, we're going to give you a cheese steak in every pot. That's my slogan.
Cheese steak in every pot.
No, I think I'm going to modify. Cheese steaks and smoke pot.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Cheese steaks and smoke pot. Vote for me, senator for Pennsylvania.
Well, your family is from the Amish district. There's like mostly Amish down there where your family comes from.
Yeah, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where there's now a lot of Amish people, but who incidentally are really going through this crisis very, very well, having bought up all the land on the cheap. Now they're all billionaires. And since they have no electricity, they don't get spied on by the NSA. Okay, so they're living the life. You know, they're the smart people in all this.
Anyway, who thinks Max should run for senator of Pennsylvania? I guess that's a good option. I think it's a good state to run from rather than New York. New York is a bit too mafia'd up, you might say, like a political mafia.
Well, New York's Democratic, and I would have to run as a Republican. So I'd have to run as a Republican in Pennsylvania, which is more of a Republican state. But it's going to be, you know, like Tony Blair came up with New Labor. I'm going to come up with something called New Republicanism. And that's about cheesesteaks and smoking dope. Now, that's a message that I think the young people in Pennsylvania can get behind. I'll get the young vote for sure. I'll get the women's vote because of my voice. You know, it gives women orgasms just when I talk. And the old white guys, I'm going to guarantee that every white man in Pennsylvania will be given a free, everyone's handicap in Pennsylvania will be reduced. If you're a golfer, you'll become a better golfer if you vote for me. If you're young, you get free dope. If you're a chick, you're going to have orgasms. Okay, so I'm going to be winning this thing. You know, it's a runaway. I'm already like 20 points ahead.
And what do you give the huge black population of Philadelphia?
A black man as a senator, because as everyone knows, I am black. So I'll be the first black Republican senator in Pennsylvania, and it all works out. Everyone wins. It's a win-win-win-win-win situation.
Maybe you should give the vote to the British population in London, the population shortage. You'll get that shortage vote.
It's possible, you know, and we could open things up. I think alternative media would be a key in my election. And so we need global alternative media to focus in on the Senate race in Pennsylvania for Max Kaiser, the black Republican who guarantees cheesesteaks and dope for all and a better handicap at the golf course for you older white men that feel threatened by all this.
Oh, well, of course, Obama, when he was running for president the first time, you know, he had that about the angry guys with their guns and religion and guns. Mm-hmm. He was talking, I think he was specifically referring to Pennsylvania, that sort of area of Pennsylvania. Also, this video emerged over the summer of that sheriff, the local sheriff of some small town in that area.
Yeah.
Remember? He fired all this assault rifle and said all sorts of swear words about Kerry and Obama, and he's the sheriff of a town.
Well, I mean, like, here's some of my creative programs for gun rights, okay? Now, the gun nuts, they want guns. Now, right now, they're protected by the Second Amendment to have guns. But, you know, in response to the gun nuts and to appease the Jesus nuts, I say everyone should carry Bibles with lead shielding. This gives them a way to protect them from random shots. It's like a cheap body armor. So you wear Bibles covered in Kevlar. So you carry your Kevlar-covered Bible and you've got some protection against a gun nut while you're worshiping Jesus. So now add to that the fact that my free cell phone program, because that's one good thing that Barack Obama did do, is he gave away free phones. My free cell phone program will put the phone in the Kevlar and lead covered Bible, so you can make NSA protected and non-NSA spied on telephone calls
while eating your steak sandwich.
Yeah, and you get the free chili cheesesteak, and you get the better golf handicap, and you get the free dope. So this all comes together in one beautiful campaign. How are we going to pay for all this? How are we going to pay for all this? How are we going to pay for all this? Well, it's no big thing, okay? Because we can pay for this by getting rid of. First of all, we're going to get rid of a lot of like Pennsylvania, the PNC. It's a big bank in Pennsylvania. I think it's Pennsylvania National Commerce or something. PNC. You got PP&G, which is Pittsburgh Paint and Glass. You got the Duquesne Club in Pittsburgh, which is where all the big white guys could go to get to golf. All these things need to be reexamined and studied for maximum cost-benefit analysis. Like these guys, the bankers in Pennsylvania need to be re-educated. So I'm going to open a banker re-education camp. I'm going to let people for $5 throw tomatoes at banksters. Now, that's going to raise $20 million right there, because it'll be a line down the block. You put bankers in stocks, and you let people throw tomatoes at them. Okay, that right there is going to raise $20 million day one. The whole state's going to be in fiscal surplus within 36 months of being elected as senator, as I pave the way toward becoming governor of that state.
Now it's governor. Wow.
Yeah, well, I gotta become governor.
Well, so we've got 1 minute left. And the other thing you could do is restore back to the original, like earlier days of America, and get rid of the income tax completely. A lot of bright young people will move there, and impose like more of the sin taxes, which is how the U.S. government was originally financed. Because we know people want their heroin, they want their coke, they want their alcohol, they want their dope. But tax those instead.
Well, anybody taking the SATs, the standard, what does SAT stand for? Standard Aptitude Tests, I think, which they use at the high school level to determine college eligibility. Anyone who scores 1,550 and above out of a possible score of 1,600 gets a free ride to University of Pennsylvania. Okay, so if you're a smart guy, gal, you get good SATs, you get free education at University of Pennsylvania. Plus, I'll throw in another bag of free dope. Okay, I'll throw in another bag of free dope. And I'm not talking about that street skunk stuff. I'm talking about Sensimillion, you know, good Sensimillion dope. So you get a 1550 combined SAT score. You go to University of Penn and a free bag of dope.
Well, that's Max's platform, running for governor now of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets with the most dangerous couple in the financial media.
Bye, y'all.